don't sweat the technique.
The fourth hour of First Up here on TSN 1050. Aaron Korolnik and Carlo Koliakovo with you. We'll be joined by Charlie Batch, longtime NFL quarterback. A couple Super Bowl rings on his resume. He'll join us in just a moment, Carlo. But you look at some of the games this weekend were exceptional, right? You talk about Dallas and San Fran, which was as entertaining a football game as you will ever see. Then you had games like last night, certainly Sunday night, the Steelers and the Chiefs that were not particularly close. So some good, some bad, but it's always good to catch up with Charlie Batch. Again, that longtime NFLer, Pittsburgh Steelers analyst as well, as he joins us here on First Stop. Hey, Charlie, how's it going?
Good morning. How are you, fellas?
We're good, man. We're good. And let's start with your old stomping grounds. I guess your current stomping grounds, as you cover this team now as a media member with the Steelers. A tough finish to the season. And I don't think it was completely unexpected that the Steelers would have a lot of issues with Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes in particular. But we know that you're very close with Ben Roethlisberger. You played a long time in Pittsburgh alongside Big Ben. When you think about what we imagine and what we expect to be the end for Big Ben, the way he went out, not ideal, but there was some good along the way in the final couple of weeks. What are some of your lasting memories of being Ben's teammate, and I imagine a close friend as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've known him all 18 years that he's been in Pittsburgh, and of course I played 9 of my 11 years alongside of him, man. And he's just special talent, and you saw it early on. And you have to credit him, you know, for really putting in the work behind the scenes to make himself that elite quarterback that he wanted to be. And obviously you saw the rest of his history as it relates to his 18 years. But, of course, a little challenging coming down and watching him at the end because he couldn't move as much as he was accustomed to, which, you know, that was glaring to a lot of people who followed him over the years. But, man, he was able to rally the troops. They were able to win 3 of the last 4 and get in the playoffs. And unfortunately, you know, you're dealing with a tough Kansas City team. People really thought that they were going to be one and done. So, but after speaking to him, it's a long way to say he's at peace with his decision. And, you know, he's walking away, you know, he's where he needs to be. He's in the right space.
No, and it was a hell of a career, a Hall of Fame career, and it'll be very fascinating to see what Pittsburgh does in the offseason with regards to their quarterback position. Well, maybe we'll get to that a little bit later, but you mentioned how great Kansas City looked on Sunday night. Patrick Mahomes going off for 5 touchdowns, more than 400 yards through the air, and now they play host to the Buffalo Bills, and we are a Bills show, Charlie. We are Bills supporters here, part of Bills Mafia, considering our close proximity to Buffalo here in Toronto, and a Bills fan, a diehard Bills fan, and my partner, Carlo Koliakovo. When you look at the Bills visiting Kansas City, how do you kind of handicap this game, and who do you like to ultimately emerge in it?
Man, to be honest with you, I mean, if you'd have asked me a couple weeks ago, I would have said Kansas City. But the way that Josh Allen is playing right now, and especially if you get to this playoff point, man, you know, last year's playoff run really, you know, could help him this year. He's playing with a lot more confidence, and they truly believe that they can beat Kansas City. So I think it's going to be a very entertaining game. But again, you know, just watching what Kansas City, I've been able to watch them twice over the last 5 weeks, man. They look tough. But either way, I think I expect a really good game between both teams.
Yeah, thank God it's the Sunday night primetime game, because I, as you, expect it to be a hell of a game, a barn burner between both two really good quarterbacks and two really, really good teams that could both easily be Super Bowl representatives or even Super Bowl champions when this is all said and done. I want to revert back to the Pittsburgh Steelers and just ask you, you know, what's the mood like in Pittsburgh right now? Is there more of a settling feeling knowing that, you know, Big Ben got his, you know, his going away game on Monday night, where, you know, fans got to recognize all the great things that he did? Like, is the organization ready for a change, you know, at the guard and ready to embrace a new name, new quarterback in the city? Or, you know, is there still sort of that love that is with Ben Roethlisberger that maybe he can squeeze out? Because let's be honest, it was tough to watch him go out the way that he did, because he just looked like he couldn't keep up anymore.
Yeah, I think so. And I think a lot of it is just, you know, they've had a whole year, and because they've had honest conversation with Ben and he let them know prior to that this is this strong chance that it's going to be over. So they had a chance to evaluate not just Mason Rudolph. You have Joshua Dobbs, and of course the late addition coming into training camp was Dwayne Haskins, for them to bring in. So they have a chance to look at these quarterbacks to see if they are the future, or are they going to be a stopgap on maybe anticipating drafting somebody this year? So it's really going to be different. It's a different era. But, of course, in Pittsburgh, you know, everybody's going to remember Ben Roethlisberger because he helped close that gap between Terry Bradshaw and himself. So either way, it's a new era, and it's the end of an era because Ben Roethlisberger is the last player to have participated on the Super Bowl 45 team. So now all these young players that are in here, and I know a couple of them were on Super Bowls on other teams, but as it relates to Pittsburgh, there is not one person on this team. So really, they now have to go out here and create their own legacy.
We're joined by Charlie Batch. And Charlie, you know, I think people really admire the job that Mike Tomlin's been able to do as a head coach of this Pittsburgh Steelers organization throughout his whole tenure. I mean, never has he had a record over under 500, which is an incredible accomplishment. And a lot of it is because he's had Ben Roethlisberger there with him. If you had to decide on the direction, would the direction of the next quarterback be to draft and develop a guy, or would you go out there and maybe try to make a big splash in the quarterback market with the big names that might potentially be available, like a Russell Wilson, like an Aaron Rodgers, or even one Deshaun Watson?
Well, in the fantasy world, that makes sense, and that will get everybody happy. Problem is, what's the collateral that you have to give up? And if you're talking about two or three first-round picks, that lets you know if you make a trade like that, you really feel that you're one player away from making a Super Bowl run. This team is not. And there are a lot of glaring holes that they have on this team, and it's, they can't afford to give up those draft picks. So I say all of that, that I fully expect Mason Rudolph to literally be the quarterback in 2022. Wow. Now, they'll bring in some competition, but they have a lot invested in me. 4 years, we had a chance to see him against Detroit in November. Yeah, they tied that football game, but Kevin Colbert, the general manager, he truly believes in Mason Rudolph. So I will be shocked if they made a big trade for a big name in the offseason.
Wow. Charlie, last night we saw the Rams hosting the Arizona Cardinals, and I think we were all shocked at the lack of offensive performance from Kyler Murray, who was abysmal last night against the Rams defense that looked really good. Matthew Stafford was efficient. Really, he didn't need to do much in the second half because the Rams had built such a big lead. And now the Rams travel to Tampa Bay to take on Brady and the Bucks. I was really fascinated to see the Bucks listed as just 3-point favorites hosting the Rams. And if you, you know, you used Vegas parlance throughout the years, home field is worth 3 points. So on a neutral field, Vegas looks at these two teams as a coin flip. How do you see the Rams' chances in Tampa this weekend, Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I definitely would put a coin flip on this particular game because, man, Rams are playing well. And to your point, when they built that big lead, I turned off the game and went to sleep. So that was not even a game. I'm like, okay, it's not even worth me losing my sleep only because I have to get out and walk in the morning. So I had to be up fresh and ready to go, which I'm still walking. So if I'm huffing and puffing, I apologize there. But when I look at these Buccaneers, a lot of injuries, especially now if you look at an offensive line. That's going to be critical for them, especially when you have Aaron Donald, Von Miller, those guys up front that can get it done. So they have a lot of questions on the offensive line, which Vegas obviously sees. I just think this is going to be a close game as well. I don't anticipate a blowout by any means.
Yeah, Tristan Wirfs, who's been an absolute just force for Tampa Bay's offensive line. It looks
big
like
question mark there, man.
He's a big question mark. And there's a bunch of injuries. I mean, not only for Tampa, I mean, Cincinnati's got injuries on their D-line. It's not only that. And San Francisco has injury concerns as well on defense with Bosa and Warner. They're question marks leading up to the game. But I mentioned San Fran, and they took out the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, I think everybody on the planet knows that by now, especially considering what happened with Dak and the 14 seconds and the QB draw. But yesterday, Stephen Jones comes out on Dallas radio. He's their executive vice president, Jerry Jones' son, and says, and he was asked whether he was confident that Mike McCarthy would continue to lead the Dallas Cowboys. And Jones' answer, absolutely. Very confident. If you were a Cowboys fan, Charlie, how would you feel about Mike McCarthy being back as your head coach?
Well, obviously, I'm a big fan of Mike McCarthy only because he's a Pittsburgh guy. Mm-hmm. But also, in the same sense, I'm a little upset at him because he beat us when he was with the Packers and loved, obviously, halting us from a Super Bowl championship. So, you know, I'm a little love-hate relationship there. But it doesn't surprise me when Stephen Jones comes out and says, listen, Mike is our guy. Now you have to now be patient. I know it's quick, you know, quick trigger, you know, because things doesn't end the way that you would like it to end, but you just can't make those quick rational decisions. And I think they have all the pieces in place. Unfortunately, they just have to get it together, but there probably will be some moving parts. Of course, there's always free agency as it relates to players, but they have, quite frankly, both of their coordinators are being interviewed for head coaching positions. So maybe you lose one, maybe you lose two, but everything won't be the same. And unfortunately, hey, this is what we've expected. That's why we laugh when we talk about Dallas, because it's not nothing new. It's been 30 years. So they haven't won a championship, so we're not expecting them to do that. So I think ultimately, I like the position that Stephen Jones has taken. I think Mike McCarthy will turn that around, and trust me, they'll be back being talked about. Now it's just a matter of whether or not they can win a playoff game next year.
Charlie, throughout your whole time in Pittsburgh, you got to witness firsthand the struggles that the Cincinnati Bengals went through with their franchise over the last 31 years, and they get their first win in the playoffs in 31 years, led by Joe Burrow, who has definitely put himself in the conversation as an elite quarterback in this league. But what type of chance do you give the Bengals going into Tennessee and maybe coming out with an upset win?
Yeah, I think, honestly, man, I'm a huge Joe Burrow fan. I obviously had a chance to watch him up close and personal over three times, because last year he was injured the second game that they played. But, man, this guy can throw the football around. He's a winner. We saw what he did at LSU. But now when you turn around and put these, you know, now comparing them to Tennessee, playing that first wild card game gives you a slight advantage, because you know you have that game speed versus having to sit around. And if I'm Cincinnati, I kind of take that same mindset that we had back in 2005, when we had our Super Bowl run, when we played the Bengals in the first round, had to go up to Indianapolis and beat a tough Peyton Manning team when they were the number one seed, knowing that they sat for 2 weeks. That was tough. And we knew that if we got on top of them early, we didn't think that they were going to be able to catch up. We were able to get on top of them. So if Cincinnati can now do that to Tennessee, I just don't think that they have a strong enough passing game to catch up, because that Bengals defense is really solid.
What do you think we can expect from Derrick Henry, who we haven't seen in so long? It's expected he'll be back at running back for the Tennessee Titans. Do you think, like, Vrabel will be like, all right, here you go, big dog, here's 25 carries, or will they kind of ease him in his return after being off for so long?
I don't think they ease him in. I think they go right at it, only because that helps Ryan Tannehill when I play action games. When you remove him from the lineup, nobody's respecting the running game in the manner that they do when he walks in. So it's going to be interesting. But if I'm Derrick Henry, hey, listen, I almost had 1,000 yards at the halfway point. You better believe I'm here to make up some time. And he's going to try to be out there as much as he can.
Oh, man, he is going to be fired up for that, because very few people kind of gave him a chance to even return. It was like, all right, broke your foot, you're done for the year. It's a lot like Cam Akers, who we saw last night for the Rams, who made his return.
By him.
I mean, a different injury, no doubt. I mean, a torn Achilles in July.
But just think about if Derrick Henry did not get hurt, we'll be talking about how many yards he could potentially have. He could have easily had over 2,000 yards based off the pace that he was on.
Yeah, and so much of a workload, too. I mean, they just feed him, and I'm very, very eager to see what he's got at this point in the season, considering the long layoff and somewhat of a difficult matchup, even though they're at home hosting the Cincinnati Bengals. Charlie, we really appreciate your time. Enjoy your walk. What's the deal this morning? You just going on a stroll, or is there some running involved? What's the deal there?
No, I'm not sure if you got the snow, but we got every bit of 12 inches of snow over the last 2 days. Mm. So, of course, you know, battling the snow, trying to get, clear the driveway, because I'm really anal when it comes to that. Like, my driveway has to be perfect, guys, and clear before every other neighbor. So,
I love that. Respect.
That is me. But I'm just out here walking today. I'm actually approaching 7 miles as we
I've been out here
since 7 a.m., so it's every bit of 15 degrees out here. My gloves are starting to stick to my hands. So, hey, it's all good.
Good for
That's
you, man.
Quite the
Good
stroll.
For you. Nice brisk morning, too.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for taking the time. And we look forward to having you back on the show before the playoffs conclude. So enjoy the rest of your stroll, my friend.
Hey, I appreciate it. As always, thanks for having me, fellas.
All right. See you, Charlie. Thank you.
That's Charlie Batch, longtime NFL quarterback, two-time Super Bowl champ with the Steelers. 2.5-hour walk, Coco. I mean, it's a long commute to just stroll around, respect
Charlie.
You won't
be finding me doing that anytime soon.
No, I probably will be doing that today, to be honest. That sounds like my plan this afternoon.
I shoveled for almost 4 hours yesterday. I don't think I can move today.
You got to get that downward dog going to loosen up that lower back.
I definitely do.
Yes, indeed. Well, maybe you can do that during the commercial break. And in the meantime, we'll welcome Javon Shepherd to the show next, our TSN 1050 Raptors analyst. The Raps play the Heat down to the wire. They can't pick up the W, but certainly a lot of positives to be drawn from that performance last night. It's Karolnik and Koliakovo. First Up continues. This is TSN 1050. First Up continues. This is TSN 1050. Karolnik and Koliakovo with you. We try to bring you some culture, some information beyond the sports world from time to time. It's big news in business this morning. Microsoft buying Activision Blizzard. And if you don't know what Activision Blizzard is, it's the company that produces games like Call of Duty and Warcraft and Diablo, Candy Crush, which so many kids play. Man, just a massive deal. I think it's worth almost, $68 billion. Microsoft buying that company. And it's also looking at Peloton, which we remember early in the pandemic, like everybody was talking about Peloton and things going so well for that company. Down almost 80%. Since May of 2020. So just ugly times for that company. And I would say the prospects for the Toronto Raptors a lot brighter than Peloton. And a man who knows that better than anyone is our next guest. He is Javon Shepherd, one of our Raptors analysts here on TSN 1050, and a good friend of ours. What's up, Javon? How are you?
How's it going?
We're great, man. We're great. And it was a really exciting game last night between the Toronto Raptors and the Miami Heat. It kind of had a playoff-type vibe. I mean, it was very intense down the stretch. And unfortunately for the Raps, Miami was able to get that game done, but get that game closed out. And listen, I think we all expect Miami to be there at the end of the season, be in the mix for the top of the East. But I think it really has to show that the Toronto Raptors are capable of hanging with the big boys. Not only with their performance last night against Miami, Javon, but also the win against Milwaukee and that performance against the Phoenix Suns last week. They get to be feeling pretty good about the Raptors right now.
You got to, right? You know, you look at this club, and Nick Nurse said it best yesterday. There's a lot to be excited about. There's a lot to be happy about with this. There's a lot of positives, rather, because this team has won some really big games this season, despite injuries, health and safety protocols, and whatever it may be. And I think, you know, a case last night, you got to see the potential, you got to see the ceiling of this team, because the reality is they played with seven players and really six after Champagne dislocated his finger there. So they've done it on the right way. They've done it on the defensive end, and you have to credit them, right?
Oh, for sure. For sure. And you mentioned how the Raptors, Nick Nurse, aren't exactly employing the deepest of benches. Pretty much completely antithetical to what Miami does, who uses a ton of players in their rotation. And I think that, number one, speaks to the depth that the Miami Heat have. But I think it also, secondly, speaks to, I'm not going to say the lack of trust that Nick Nurse has in his bench. Well, I mean, I think that is fair to say at this point. But clearly, Birch is out. We know Gary Trent, the birthday boy, is out as well. When you think about the way that Nick Nurse is using his bench or not using his bench, does that concern you, or is that simply something that is a product of the current environment with the Raptors?
I think it's a product of the current environment, right? I look at it from a standpoint. Yesterday, you know, that back end of the bench wasn't used, but I think that was a way of sending a message, right? Because there's opportunity here. And I thought for, you know, a couple of games, he was really patient with Svi Mykhailiuk, because he's a guy that can bring something that this team needs, that punch off the bench, that ability to shoot the basketball and score, put some points on the board, but it hasn't translated, right? But then you also give, you know, those guys that are going to be in your top eight rotation some time to get some rhythm. You know, nobody has to look over their shoulder and see anybody coming off the bench as a player, so you're able to get that rhythm and feel good about yourself. But at the end of the day, it boils down to guys have to step up, especially in that role, because there's a need, there's a void, and everybody can see it. Like, that's the least producing bench in the NBA right now. But I think Nick Nurse has done a tremendous job with what he has, and when you look at it, you know, this team is 15th overall in the NBA, right? There's a lot of other teams that have bigger fish to fry. You have Lakers, Portland, LA Clippers, who all have had bigger expectations. And the Raptors have done a great job with what they had, sitting in ninth in the East right now in just four games behind sixth place. So, you know, it's a mix of everything. And players got to be able to come out and compete. I think they have some young pieces that are still getting better and building. And this is a part of the process. This is a part of the growth and also a part of, you know, where the Toronto Raptors have hung their hat over the last couple of years in development of young players. And that's going to be for their bench as well.
Javon, a lot to like about this Raptors team at the midway point, including the play of Siakam and Fred VanVleet that have elevated their styles to, you know, all-star potential. Is this something that, you know, maybe you feel encouraged about or can expect that this level of production can sustain itself for the rest of the season based on the way Nick Nurse is using his rotation?
You know, you look at the numbers again, and yeah, is it sustainable? I don't know, because Fred is leading the league in minutes. Pascal is not far behind with, you know, 36.3 minutes per game and seventh in the league. So at some point, you know, it's natural that these guys are going to hit some wall and have some fatigue. But in terms of their production, right, like these guys are elite players. Pascal's been an all-star, and we're going to speak it into existence that Freddie's going to be one this year as well. I think they're made for it, right? And I think they're at the point in their career where they understand their game. They understand, you know, when to press gas and when to pull back a bit. And in Pascal's case, he's at a point now where he didn't have the summer to really play and work on the things that he needed to. He's really just getting his rhythm now and getting his legs under him and starting to feel good about his game again. So I do think from a production standpoint, this is the level that these guys are going to play at. This is the bar that they have set. Now, in terms of the minutes, yeah, it's natural, right? You know, they're not invincible. Fatigue is going to hit at some point. And that goes back to our other point just before in terms of bench production, right? You get a little more bench production, you're able to alleviate those guys or give them a breath of fresh air and longer stints on the bench to catch themselves.
Our guest is Javon Shepherd. He's one of our Raptors analysts here at TSN 1050. And you look at the Raptors' opponent last night, Javon. The Miami Heat are a team that I think everybody would expect to be there when it's all said and done in the Eastern Conference. They're really deep. I mean, Jimmy Butler had a triple-double. Bam Adebayo made his return from thumb injury last night. And they didn't even have Kyle Lowry in the lineup, who was out due to personal reasons. When you rank the top contenders in the Eastern Conference, how high do you have the Miami Heat?
Well, if we're talking about individual talent, I don't think that's the most talented team in the East. But if you're talking about the way they play, you know, taking that Pat Riley DNA and then just having that gritty and griminess, they're able to wear down teams. So just from that standpoint, I think they're one of the top teams. They're one of the elite teams in the East. Do they have the talent of a Brooklyn Nets per se? No, but they're going to come out there. They're going to fight. They're going to wear you down. They're going to rebound. They're going to hit you. We've seen what they did to Scotty yesterday. Be extremely physical, and that alone is a mental game, right? Because you go into a game with them, and you know, like, oh, I really have to bring it. And they're going, you know, they have 12 guys that are going to come out there and bring it, and they're going to bring it physical. So I think that puts them in that upper echelon. And it's really tough to play against them, man, because they really take embody that Pat Riley toughness and bring it mentality. And then Jimmy Butler, like, triple-double last night. Is he going to go out there and score 30 every night? No. Is it going to be the prettiest basketball? No, but he's a leader and leader by example as well. So if you have your top guy setting a bar, and I'm going to play defense, I'm going to, you know, get bumped, I'm going to invigorate my team, that does a lot. That goes a long way.
Javon, we hit the midway point of the season last night after the game, and the Raptors finished the midway point at 21-20, sitting ninth place in the Eastern Conference right now. What's your realistic expectation right now of where this team could potentially finish? They are four games back of the fourth seed in the Eastern Conference.
Really tough to say, because you know, the biggest problem for this team thus far has been staying healthy, right? And we had a small sample size a couple of weeks ago. When this team is healthy, they can play with anybody. They're a top-notch team. Now, if that's the team we're measuring, that that's a playoff team. You know, to me, that's a top six team in the East, you know, hovering around that sixth or fifth spot. Now, if we continue to have the bad luck that we've had here, then I think we're in the playoff, play-in conversation, and that's going to be the deciding factor. But again, if you have this complete unit together, are they able to continue to build and grow and play the way that they have on the defensive side and, you know, continue to be one of the league leaders and fast break points and getting out and getting steals and playing tough basketball and using their length and gritty? Yeah, this is definitely a Eastern Conference playoff team.
Javon, when's your next game on the station?
Friday. Ooh. I'll be in.
Is that Washington Friday?
That's Washington Friday, and then Portland on Sunday, I believe. I'll be in for both.
All right. Powell, potential return game on Sunday and Friday. We know Bradley Beal always takes it to the rap, so those should be a couple of fun games.
Video salute on Sunday for Norm Powell.
Oh, yeah. And just
with all the seats in the stands.
Old wave to the stand. Wave to the empty seats. That's how
it's been tough, man. It's been tough for these guys. You think about it. They're the only team, again, playing without their home fans, home crowd. So they really don't have an advantage when they're home. So they've done a good job with all things considered.
They have indeed, and you've done a great job on our show. As always, my friend, you've nailed it, and we look forward to having you on again next week. Thanks, buddy. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
All right, that's Javon Shepherd, one of our Raptors analysts here at TSN 1050. Again, the Raps taking on the Dallas Mavericks tomorrow night. Friday night, they have the Washington Wizards, a game you can hear right here on TSN 1050. Now, Chrissy, you might want to hit the breaking news, as there is a big piece of breaking news in the NHL. Kent Hughes has been announced as the new general manager of the Montreal Canadiens. Mm. A big, I wouldn't call it a surprise because this has been rumored, but he is not the traditional hire in that he's not a general manager, hasn't been in management before. He was a player agent, right?
Yeah.
And I guess this would be similar to the mold of Bill Zito, who was a player agent and became a general manager. Now Kent Hughes, who is bilingual, his agency was based in Montreal, and he does have a longstanding relationship with the new president of hockey ops there, and Jeff Gorton. But I imagine, Coco, you've had some kind of run-ins with Kent Hughes over the years of your time in hockey. What do you know about him?
I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't really recognize the name when it first got mentioned. So I'm excited to learn a lot about him. I mean, I'm doing the Montreal Canadian games tonight, and this is going to be obviously a big story in our pregame, the fact that they have named a general manager. And, you know, learning a lot about, you know, Kent Hughes' relationship and the link between the position that was available and the relationship with Jeff Gorton, the president of hockey ops. It seemed like the popular decision, if you were going to go by that, because ultimately this makes you believe that most of the moves that are made are going to be overseen by Jeff Gorton, the president of hockey ops. It's just Ken Hughes there, going to help him with the recruiting, going to help him with the conversations that need to be had as a GM, going to be in help with the conversations that need to that need to be held with the fans. So, look, all in all, this is them putting the pieces of the puzzle together, and it starts now. Like, you talk about the auditions that the Montreal Canadian players are going to start to, you know, play with a little bit more urgency on. That's to play for their jobs and what this team is going to look like next year.
Well, I'm looking at Kent Hughes' list of clients. His number one highest paid client is a man named Chris Letang, who is a pending UFA this offseason. Of course,
there you go.
Has roots to the Quebec area for sure, obviously. And that's, I wonder if there could be a connection there for Montreal, who could probably use Chris Letang. I mean, there's a lot of teams in the NHL that could use a guy like Chris Letang, who's having a great year. And I just wonder, because I hate to make another Entourage reference, but remember when Ari Gold was stepping away from all of his clients and was going to join the was going to take over the head of the studio role or whatever? And I wonder, like, for Kent Hughes, who has all these clients, like Chris Letang, Patrice Bergeron, Darnell Nurse, who just signed a huge ticket with the Oilers, Drake Batherson, like, financially, does it line up? Like, whatever role he would take, I guess it must, with Montreal and the commissions that he was receiving from his clients, I guess it's probably would be pretty close. Or maybe just Ken Hughes is looking to get away from the day-to-day as an agent and kind of join the day-to-day as a manager.
I don't think the job changes that much because as an agent, you're still recruiting, right? You're obviously you're negotiating. But the big part of being a successful agent is recruiting the next player that comes up through
that's
the pipeline.
Fair.
And,
That's fair.
You know, as a GM, yeah, you're negotiating with agents and with players and stuff like that, but you're also trying to recruit players to come play for your team, whether that's through personal relationships that you already have with some of your clients or with that, if that's through just, you know, setting up your scouting department and trying to find, you know, the best player with all the assets that Montreal's accumulated. And, you know, we talked to CJ earlier in the show. You know, this could be a quick turnaround for Montreal if they actually execute it properly because, you know, they have pieces there. They have, you know, Nick Suzuki. They have Cole Caulfield. The, you know, I don't know if they find a way to move on from Jeff Petrie or Ben Chiarot, but, you know, they have Jake Allen and Nett. You still don't know what Carey Price's future is going to be if he stays in Montreal. You know, and he's healthy next year, you're legitimately a competitive team again. And you add on top of that, if you get a high draft pick and you find a way to get Shane Wright,
yes,
you know, you're injecting a high-end level prospect to the group that is not that talented around itself as it is because they've always had a problem scoring goals. But Jeff Gorton has to have his own eyes on this team and you know, translate this roster into what he envisions a successful roster looking like, sort of like what he did in help rebuilding and reshaping the New York Rangers, which really, if he would have been just given one more year, you know, and they didn't react emotionally based on something that Tom Wilson did that embarrassed the whole organization and actually got the owner to pay attention to what was going on with the team and getting involved. Maybe he still have a job with the Rangers, and this wouldn't be, you know, something that we'd be talking about right now. But clearly, Jeff Gorton helped accelerate a rebuild in New York, and he plans to help accelerate the same rebuild in Montreal.
Yeah, I gotta be honest, I'm not really with you on the way you perceive Montreal and their future. I mean, Cole Caulfield has one goal in 29 games this year. And listen, I understand, you know, last year, and he's a kid, and yada yada yada, but he's got one goal in 29 games this year, and he's had ample opportunity on the power play, on the top line, the second line, whatever. Nick Suzuki, they just gave a massive contract to, and he's got 19 points in 37 games. And listen, these guys are underperforming. They were great in the playoffs. I thought Cole Caulfield was going to be a stud this year. I'm a huge fan of Caulfield as a, you know, maybe in the World Juniors and definitely in the playoffs, and we saw what he did in college, winning the Hobie Baker. But he has been a massive bust this year. And I'm not saying he's going to be a massive bust in his career, but there is no denying that. And he's a huge part of that team's future. I just feel... You look at guys like Drouin, Toffoli, Anderson, Dvorak, Gallagher. They're all signed to, like, what, between $4 and $6 million. And they're all good at times, but the consistency has been far, far away this year from what it was last year for those guys. And listen, could they get it together and everything kind of comes back and Carey Price comes back and is a really good goalie, and maybe next year everything kind of sorts itself out and they're contending for a playoff spot once again, perhaps. But for me, this is not that alluring of a job, like, at all. Like, I don't think...
As a GM position or as a hockey position?
As a GM position. Listen, I don't know if Ken Hughes is picking between all these different opportunities, but I don't think Montreal is that well positioned to be in a great spot for the next 5 years at all. And listen, this all hinges.
I don't know how you can comfortably say that with the status of Carey Price.
Well,
that's exactly what I was getting to.
The Carey Price thing, $10.5 million for a number of years to go. Listen, dude hasn't played hockey this year. He's restarting his rehab. If they can get that contract off the books, and then you can actually really execute the rebuild, because we know Carey Price is an unbelievable performer in the postseason. But look at his regular season stats over the last 3 years. In the regular season, he's average. If I'm going to the Olympics and I want Carey Price as my starting goaltender, if I'm starting a postseason, I want Carey Price as my goaltender. But he's not a regular season performer. I don't know what that says about him. I mean, he comes up big in the biggest moments. That's great. But he's not going to get you to the playoffs. Like, you're going to have to find guys who can score and put up points and win your regular season games to get to the point where Carey Price can carry you. And, I mean, there has been very little indication that you're going to see him this year again, and maybe you will. Maybe they can find a way to move him out and retain some salary. But a precarious spot for Montreal, and we'll see if the Gorton-Hughes combo can have a lot of success in turning that franchise around. Yeah. I mean, couldn't hire Pat Morris? I mean, that's where I would have gone.
I do remember Pat Morris back in the day. Like, we're talking maybe, almost 10 years ago. He was rumored to be a candidate for the Florida Panthers GM job. That was way before, like, Dale Talon and stuff like that. And he told me firsthand, he goes, look, he thought he considered it, but you know, the difficulty of jumping into the GM world is that there's no real security, right? Because, sure, you know, you could go in there with high hopes and high expectations, but, you know, you don't always get what's on your wish list, and that could ultimately determine, you know, the fate of your job moving forward. And we've seen guys like Mike Gillis in Vancouver did the same thing, was a player agent, walked into the GM
Brian
role.
Brian Burke.
Bill Zito is the latest example of it, who's done an amazing job in Florida with the Panthers. But, you know, it's like I try to explain to people, especially when you're working with a group like Newport and Pat Morris, is a lot of these well-reputable agents basically act as each team's GMs in free agency, because they plug and play and they help GMs and hockey ops staff understand the makeup of their roster, the salary cap, the salaries they can afford, and the players that they can necessarily infiltrate into their lineups. And it doesn't work out all the time, but most of the time it does.
Very fascinating stuff. And maybe we'll reach out to Pat, see if he has any interest in joining us tomorrow. I'd be very curious to know about his past considerations of making the move from hockey management, or I guess player management, to hockey management, and what that would entail for Kent Hughes, who again has been announced this morning as the new general manager of the Montreal Canadiens, the 18th GM in team history. Hughes, now formerly of Quartex Management, who represented guys like Patrice Bergeron and Chris Letang, Darnell Nurse, Drake Batherson, amongst others. So that'll be
Quartex Management. I believe that's
Anton Thun.
Marner's agent. What's his name?
Darren Ferris.
Darren Ferris. I believe
we still have it, Chris.
There it is. I was waiting for the sound.
Is that part of the Ferris agency as well? Okay, I didn't know that was all in one. I don't think that is. I mean, it could be the case. I'm not sure exactly. Yeah. But yeah, Kent Hughes no longer. I guess you have to relinquish your stake in the agency, right? If you're going to join a hockey team. But that's it's an interesting one. That's happened in the NBA too. Like Rob Pelinka, I believe, was an agent as well, and comes the general manager of the LA Lakers. So we're looking forward to breaking it all down tomorrow. Certainly, Julie and Al's brother on Leafs Lunch will have you covered at noon. They'll be talking about Kent Hughes, I imagine, and gameplay. Matthew Cause and the guys on Overdrive will have you covered throughout the course of the day here on TSN 1050. We'll be back to wrap things up. First Up rolls on. This is TSN 1050. Wrapping things up here on First Up for this Tuesday morning, I'm Aaron Korolnik. He is Carlo Koliakbo. A very special anniversary, or perhaps one that pains New England Patriots fan. On this day, and Narod, if you want to throw your headphones on and give us your recollection, on this day in 2015, the AFC Championship game between the Patriots and the Colts, the Patriots just crush Indy 45-7. But there was something going on with the balls that day, Arod. Tom Brady inflating or deflating them to a certain level. And man, did it ever start the biggest controversy, or one of them, in the history of professional sports.
It did. I mean, that's the thing. Painful start to that weekend, but a great ending with the Patriots beating the Seattle Seahawks and Tom Brady making the Legion of Doom look like a bunch of children.
Legion of
Hold
Boom.
On a second.
Legion Boom. Of Boom.
A bunch of children. They won on a heroic play by Rasheed Butler, didn't they?
They did, by Malcolm Butler.
Who is Rasheed Butler?
It's Miami Heat player.
Yeah, Rasheed. I'm like, where do I even know the name Rasheed Butler?
Yeah, good my call. Bad. Malcolm Butler.
Shoot them threes.
So, yeah.
Malcolm Butler. And then they benched him 2 years later.
Right. In the Super Bowl. Oh, man, only what Bill Belichick.
Only Bill Belichick. Well, I'm looking forward to tomorrow's show already. We only have 20 hours to go. I know we'll be joined by Dave Poulin. We'll be joined by, forget who else you told me during the commercial break.
Liam McHugh.
Oh, I love Liam McHugh.
The American James Duthie.
Wow, yeah. Jinx. You're not allowed to talk again for the rest of the show, Carlo. Thanks to Chris. Thanks to Arad. I guess you got to, you know what, I'll just finish it for you. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow morning.